time for In and Around the House with Tony Wirtz and Ernie Brown. Got a question? Call us at 749-B105. Now, let's join Tony Wirtz and Ernie Brown for In and Around the House.
Good morning. Welcome to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. It's going to be a great day to get some stuff done in and around your house because traffic's going to be a mess anywhere you go. I saw in the paper yesterday morning where, of course, downtown Cincinnati is loaded. An awful lot of fun going on with Oktoberfest Cincinnati. The Reds are in town playing a doubleheader today. They are removing some of the lanes of traffic on 7175 northbound, so you might be better served to kind of stay home and work around the house. Morning, Tony.
Good morning, Ernie. How are you?
I am doing dandy,
thanks. And I agree with you. A lot of activities going on today.
Yeah, and it's wonderful. Don't get me wrong. The Bengals, thankfully, are playing up in Pittsburgh. So near it, we'd really be in for it.
Thankfully?
I love the new location for Oktoberfest Cincinnati down on 2nd and 3rd Street. I hope the city decides to keep it there. Much more spread out, much nicer, and showcases the city a lot better.
I agree with you. So that's always a good time. And I've not been in a long time,
actually. Oh, you're going to love
it. Are you thinking about going?
I very well might.
You very well may.
It depends on how quickly I can get through the list at my house, or I should say my wife Lisa's list. Pappy is turning 84 next Saturday, and it has been relentless. I have never seen such a list from her. Usually it's one or two things, and if I get those completed, I'm a good boy. You're a good lad.
A good lad.
Yeah.
So, hey, you were just saying a moment ago we're going to have a great day to do things outside.
Yeah. In and around your
house. In and around the house. Well, yeah. Well, throw a little weather on me because I'm not sure. Did you get any rain last night?
We did early in the night.
How much? It was very little.
Yeah, it was brief. It was probably a little 5-10 minute shower, and then it was gone. But according to our forecasters, there's a 70% chance of some precipitation throughout the course of the day. Temperatures expected to climb up around 80. Overnight low will be 68, but then tomorrow, partly sunny, very pleasant with a high of 78, and then much the same for Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Just before the we went on the air, you said something that was, very prominent in what we should be doing looking around our yard. Is we're just a couple of blinks away from the official start of fall.
That's right, 21st.
And
next time we're in here, we'll be in fall.
That's right. And we have shared this with you for several weeks now, and we want to touch base on it again because it's extremely important. And Tony laid this out for me inside our little kitchenette there where we were getting coffee, and there are four cabinets. And he said, look at it like this is a calendar.
Oh, you're killing me.
Here you have September. Here is October, November, and December. And where are we? And he puts his hand halfway down the cabinet and goes, we're right here in September. And where will we be in 2 weeks? At the end of September, beginning of October. So I think you were talking about seeding, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're killing me with that.
It was brilliant because I'm standing there looking and going,
look at the cabinet. What's he talking about?
He's perfectly he's correct because halfway through September, if you wait, which was your point to me, is if you wait
right
to seed for another 2 weeks, then you pointed out you're in that frost area where it could be dangerous for you to put down grass seed.
Danger, Will Robinson.
That's right.
You remember that?
That's right. I started flapping my arms around.
Danger, Will Robinson. Danger. How do you like my analogies?
I loved
there?
It.
That was. I'm always having to use some sort of a graphical representation of something when I'm explaining things.
Sure.
I don't know if it makes it easier. I don't know if some people feel offended.
No.
But you're exactly right. We're right there in the middle of September, and hopefully, if in fact you have to do a little bit of work on the lawn, or you had some bad spots, or if you're just reestablishing the lawn for the very first time, well, you can't do that. You can't reestablish something for the first time. But if you're in a new home construction, new lawn for the first time, you know, right now is ideal. And take advantage of the weather. The cool temperatures as we approach the fall season just make it so ideal for sowing grass seed.
Well, that was the thing that it hit me there was how once you laid that out, it all the clarity, a moment of clarity.
Yeah, and it's all about timing.
Yeah.
And if you want to be really successful at sowing grass seed, you have to look at it from a timing element. And if you start pushing that envelope closer to the month of October, you're starting to put yourself in a situation where, okay, it takes on the average about 2 weeks for grass seed to start germinating, and you're sowing grass seed at the beginning of October. What's happening is you're positioning that seed as it germinates to put you in the middle of the month, and then typically you start seeing frost in that third week
right.
of October.
Right.
And if it's hard enough, severe enough, those tender seedlings, as they start to germinate, could get knocked back. So that's what you risk right there. So if you get the opportunity today, tomorrow, early next week, and you need to sow grass seed, take advantage of this window. It's perfect. It's ideal.
Yep. And so when you go into your kitchen in the morning and you're explaining to your significant other, go face all four cabinets and go, here we are in September. This one is October. This one is November. The sink is December. So it, at least you have a clearer vision of that. Because I'll be honest with you, a couple of times we've said, yeah, you need to get some grass seed down or you need to apply the first step. I'll always get caught like this. Well, it's nice out. I'd really rather be riding my motorcycle. I'll do that later. Then something else comes up, a week passes, and then that opportunity is gone.
It gets by us rather quickly.
Yeah.
You know, and what precipitated this whole conversation was the question that you had asked from last week's post on Facebook about spurge.
Right.
And what was the question the gentleman had asked?
Rick Ryman over in the Green Hills had asked that if he puts down the weed-free zone, how long does he have to wait to reseed? And we're going to come back to that. When we come back, we'll explain that timetable for you. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys, and it's going to be a great day to get some stuff done in or around your house, but you got to dodge some showers. Last week, we posted on our Facebook page a picture that my son, Travis, had sent to me about spurge. It seems to crop up in his sidewalk and a couple of other areas in his landscape beds and stuff, and Tony identified it for us, so we put it on our Facebook page, and then Rick Ryman, one of our listeners from over in Green Hills ask if we used weed-free zone right now, how long would it be until they could overseed the lawn? And this is where that conversation started. I told Tony when I had a message from Rick, and he started his explanation.
In the kitchen, right here, on the cabinets.
Yeah, on the cabinets.
On the cabinets. But that's a great question, and that's why the timing element comes into play when you're sowing grass seed.
Mm-hmm.
So when you use a selective herbicide, and when we talk about herbicides, that's getting rid of broadleaf weeds, other grassy kind of items in the lawn, you know, using weed-free zone, that puts you 2 weeks out into the future, so to speak. So you have to wait 2 weeks before you're able to sow grass seed.
Right.
So therefore, as we were talking, we're roughly in the middle of September, so 2 more weeks is going to put you at the end of September. Therefore, you're at the beginning of October, you sow grass seed, then you're taking another 10 to 14 days for that grass seed to germinate, and guess what? That's where the element of frost, hard freezes, and things start to come in, perhaps, you know. Now, keep in mind, excuse me, there's been times I've gotten away with sowing grass seed in October without any issues.
Mm-hmm.
But is it worth the risk? That's the question you have to ask yourself.
Right, the risk reward.
That's right.
So what we're trying to help you avoid is making that mistake where if you think, oh, okay, I'll do it later on.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to apply any weed-free zone or any treatments on your lawn and you're wanting to overseed, as Rick just inquired about, don't put it off. Because even though it says in some of the weather reports or outlooks that we may have a longer, warmer fall than anticipated, it could suddenly just drop And then we have a frost, or we have two nights where there's a frost or a freeze warning.
You never know. But that's still a few weeks away, obviously. Yeah. So the other plan, so if they use something non-selective, like Tilsol or Roundup with glyphosate. So there, you know, as that works and gets into the root system of whatever it is you're spraying and trying to get rid of, that usually occurs in about 5 to 7 days. And by the time that is all done and said, you rake all that dead out and you can immediately sow grass seed. So you get the gain several days there.
Yeah.
So it's what is it that you're going to use to get rid of whatever it is that's plaguing you?
Sure.
That will dictate how you go about this thing in a timely fashion.
Oh, there you go, Rick. Go ahead and get that, get to your local home and garden center, pick up that weed-free zone, get it down, and then you've got a little window of opportunity to, you know, trim up the lawn or whatever else you want to do, tidy up before you overseed.
Mm-hmm. We have plenty of time.
Now, if in an established lawn, if you're wanting to overseed, is he going to need to also do the same thing where you put down some straw and keep it watered?
No, not. And again, that all depends upon how much overseeding that you're doing, how thin the lawn is.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, that's all kind of questionable. It's, and everyone has a different spin on it. I might look at something and say, you know, it's not necessary to put any straw down.
Right.
But someone else might feel so compelled to do it that they're going to do it come heck or high water. You know what I'm saying? So it's all relative, so to speak.
Sure.
And, you know, talking about sowing grass seed, get out to your local garden centers and nurseries, get with the staff, you know, kind of inform them, give them the lay of the land, tell them what you're doing, and look for a really good tall fescue. You can do it, you know, with Fine Lawn Elite, which is one of my favorites. Look for that at your local garden centers and nurseries. I've used it straight up and have had great success with Fine Lawn Elite, bar none. Or look for other, you know, there's blends that will have Fine Lawn Elite in it and some other things perhaps. But as long as you're using a tall fescue, that's what's really important. The whole blend element, Ernie, comes into play like this. A lot of people like to use blends for this reason only. If you're experiencing some issues with your turf, you know, from, like a fungal issues, you know, maybe red thread or some mildew of some sort or whatever, and you have a blend, not all the turf that's in your lawn is affected. Maybe it's one blend of the turf.
Gotcha. Okay.
And so that's where that comes into play. So it's really your call. And like I said, I've had great success with Fine Lawn Elite, bar none. And that's been around a while. It's been true, tried, and tested.
Big toe tested.
Yeah. Big time tested. I will attest to that.
Yeah, you also posted some great pictures on our Facebook page in and around the house of some fall containers. When we come back, we're going to tell you a little bit about that, how to freshen them up, how to keep them looking great, and what you should be putting in them. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And for the last couple of weeks, we've kind of been telling everyone that it will be upon us before you know it. And as Tony pointed out, by the time we come back next week, it'll be fall. And what some beautiful, are those your personal fall containers?
No, okay. Those were some things I just found out there, but I thought were very interesting to say the least, just to give you a great representation or an idea of exactly what you can do with different fall types of flowers and plants that you're going to see at your local garden centers and nurseries.
Tony posted some beautiful pictures of fall containers and planters on our In and Around the House Facebook page. And tell me what kind of stuff is in there.
Garden mums. And you know, mums the word. We were talking about mums last week, obviously. It's that time of year. They're starting to come into their heyday, so to speak. And you can buy mums at your local garden centers and nurseries in various sizes. So that gives us the opportunity, because we have various sizes to choose from, to work up whatever size pots and containers that we have in and around our homes. For example, some of the photographs that I posted were window boxes in particular. I love window boxes, and I just always admire those down at Finley Market. If you've not seen those, don't deprive yourself. You need to get down there and pick up some goodies and just admire those window boxes and just sit right there in the beer garden and suck on some suds. How's that? So we have the mums, obviously. the ornamental cabbage and kale. Again, those come in various sizes and to whatever it is to your liking, to whatever container you're trying to work up. The beauty of the cabbage and kale, they're ornamental. The cooler the temperatures become as we progress into the fall months, the more vibrant those colors become and those plants. And it's stunning. I'm telling you, it's stunning. So for those who have old, tired, worn out window boxes, containers, pots, you know, on the patio, on the deck, on the front porch, or even some stuff that's kind of looking ratty in the landscape beds, take this opportunity to clean some things up and go for that fall magic look. That's all I'm saying. It's beautiful stuff. It's going to take you up into the winter months, you know, until we start getting some really hard, heavy freezes. There's just so many things that you can use and do. The ornamental mustards, the Swiss chard. I love Swiss chard because the stems of the plant just have so much color. Mm-hmm. It just radiates. It says, hey, look at me.
Yeah.
You know, the ornamental mustards, the peppers. I'm telling you, you need to get out to your local garden centers and nurseries and check out what they have in the way of ornamental peppers because they have taken the fall season by storm.
You've said this a couple of times, and I might have to make my way down here just to see what you're talking about. I guess they're really, really spectacular, huh?
Oh, they are. You just get a lot of bang for your buck with those plants. And pansies. Uh-huh. You know, pansies are starting to show up at the local garden centers and nurseries. Go for those. If you get them in the ground in the landscape, they'll get rooted in. And guess what? 9 times out of 10, they're going to winter over for you. Right. And you're going to see those bad Oscars next spring. As soon as all the snow melts, there they are.
Sure. We're talking about fall containers, what you can put in there, and how you can spruce things up. We're going to come back to that right now. Tony, we have Ken from Lebanon on the line, who has a question for you about what evergreens would you suggest he could plant for privacy. Ken, do you like your neighbor or not?
Well, actually, my lot goes up to it at like an engineer's office. I'm just trying to buffer some of the, the piping and things like that.
I got
cleared
you.
It out. I had a bunch of honeysuckle.
Uh-huh.
So I'm trying to make it look nice.
I was trying to be, joking and add a little sense of humor there because bamboo has got great privacy, but you can't get rid of it. I was gonna, if you said, I really don't like this cat, I was gonna go put some bamboo
good
in there.
Make good neighbors, right?
Yeah, that's right.
You know, how much room do you have? Quite a bit?
I would say probably 170 feet.
Awesome. You know, right off the bat, I'm thinking arborvita, Western arborvita, and a couple here in particular. One is Green Giant. You're not going to go wrong with Green Giant. And believe me, once Green Giant gets in there and gets established, you can almost expect 2 to 3 foot a year growth.
Oh, wow.
So it's rather rapid and a great performer, by the way. You know, you can expect it to be around the 30-foot range, give or take, over time. Probably a spread around 10, 15 feet wide.
Okay. Space there.
Yeah. And it's a nice, narrow, slender pyramidal shape to that particular, arborvita. And, do those just, and then I'm talking to tell you about another one too, that's got a little notoriety from this area, as a matter of fact. But when you plant those, try to refrain from planting those in a row. Kind of offset them a little bit, you know, one back, one forward, one back, just in case if you ever lose one, it doesn't look like you got a, you know, someone knocked a tooth out.
Okay.
You know, it's not as noticeable, but you'll get a great deal of privacy and you'll be glad you took this route. Another one is one called Spring Grove. And Spring Grove, hence the name, it's a Spring Grove Cemetery selection. It maintains its color through the winter so well, and that's where the notoriety comes into play. If you're from this area and you remember the 70s, the winter that we had, that arborvita...
I do have pictures of me walking on the river.
There you go. You remember... I remember those days. I think someone even had a Volkswagen out on there.
Yeah.
But that particular, you know, Spring Grove, it held its color so well during those winter months. And what does that tell you about the performance of Spring Grove?
Sure.
Excellent resistance to deer, browsing, and bagworms. So you got it all.
Another question I have for you. Do you have a type of software where I could take a picture of my backyard and you'd be able to, like, place things? I have a hard time imagining what it's going to look like.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I do not. But do you have a pencil handy?
Can they make that?
Oh, they do. Yes, they do. I mean, there are software application programs out there that you could plug in a photo of your home and take other plants and put in its place, and it'll time it out over time, 5 years, 10 years, and you can get that full appreciation of its, you know, its size and beauty. And here's something else. I like the question that you just posed. It's all about planting the right tree in the right place.
And all right. Yeah. I just want to make sure I only want to do it once.
I'm with you. And what a lot of homeowners do, and not intentionally, is that they try to get that instant gratification, that instant effect right off the bat.
Mm-hmm.
That is the worst trap you can fall into. You know, allow things the space to grow to the size it's capable of growing, and you'll only have to do this once, and you'll have a beautiful landscape. You know, consider the height, just like you're thinking, the canopy. In your situation, you're looking for, you know, conifers. Form and shape, the growth rate. You know, we were talking about these arborvitaes putting on some quick growth. But, you know, Bob Bard, he'll be in with us in a couple weeks. I've yet to ask him to come in and do the show with me. Ernie's going to be out. Bard's Nursery is somebody I would consider approaching.
You say Bard's, B-A-R-D?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Where are you located, by the way?
In Lebanon.
You know, Jim Montag over at Lakeview, he's up near Fairfield.
Okay.
I'd start there. Who else? Anyone close to you, if you would name a name?
Is
Grandma's, near Lebanon?
Pinecrest,
yeah. Pinecrest, there you go.
Okay.
And also Sharon Nursery. So I'm not sure what software products they have, but I would call and ask.
Okay.
And a great idea. They're available.
I appreciate it. Yeah, because I just want, like I say, I only want to do it once, and I just want to pick the right things.
Right. Well, let us know what you end up doing. Keep us in the loop.
I will.
All right. Well, have a great weekend. All right. Take care.
You too.
Thanks, Ken. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We're talking also about containers, and when we come back after the break, we're going to finish up our conversation with Tony about some of the things that you can put in there and how you can spruce things up for the fall. What a beautiful moon it was coming into work today. If you get a chance, get out there before the sun comes up and check that thing out. We'll be right back. Welcome back, getting around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys, and we've been talking a little bit about fall containers, and we had a conversation earlier about some of the beautiful plants that Tony posted on our Facebook page. Take the time to jump on there and check that out. But Tony, let me ask you, if you're just going to start this process, if you're, let's just say you go out and you buy some containers and you want to get things started with this. What's the process?
You're a newbie.
I'm a newbie.
Yeah, great question.
Well, thanks.
Actually, and you can ask it, by the way.
All right, let me ask.
Let me tell you. I'll tell you what. you thought that was funny. There's a number of different containers that you can select from. Let's start there.
Yeah.
You can find some really cheesy, inexpensive plastic stuff. You can find some really nice glazed pottery. You can find some really nice, well-constructed window boxes. Concrete urns, concrete pots.
Uh-huh.
So there's a number of things that you can select from and choose from for whatever it is you want to plant in.
Sure.
Okay. What's most important when you're selecting those types of containers, whatever it may be, is that there are ample drainage holes in them. If you don't get good drainage, water's going to back up. Things are going to get a little smelly, sour, so to speak. Things are just not going to perform that well. So whatever the container is that you select to use, make sure that there's, you know, plenty of drainage holes in it to start off the, you know.
Okay, let me ask you, too. You're saying that you need the water to drain completely out of the container?
Absolutely. Yes.
Okay.
Good drainage is so important. If you don't have good drainage or, you know, sometimes some of the pots that you get, they're kind of a combination resin, maybe a fiberglass.
Uh-huh.
Those are light in weight, and a lot of people gravitate towards those.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of those will have plugs, and you might forget to pop the plug.
Gotcha.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's easier to push it out from the inside before you start filling it up with soil.
Right.
So make sure that there's ample drainage with your containers. If not, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
Now, when you're inside, it's a different thing. Or you better have some saucers or something to catch the water.
Right.
But let's go back outdoors. So you start off, you select a container. And a lot of people like the lightweight stuff, you know, especially in females, because it's a little easier for them to move those pots in and out of the house
mm-hmm.
or around on the patio and deck.
Yeah.
I love the glazed pottery. Very beautiful stuff. It comes in an array of colors. Just beautiful stuff. It really is.
Uh-huh.
Can sometimes be a little heavy.
Okay.
Even concrete. So it just depends upon your situation. So we're selecting our container, making sure that we have ample drainage, you know, situation where there's enough holes mm-hmm. for drainage. Thirdly, what you're going to want to do before you start putting your soil into the container, I like to use gravel, broken clay pots, sometimes a cocoa liner on the bottom of the pot inside. So
what's a cocoa liner?
Well, it's that cocoa fiber.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And the reason why I like to use that is because if you have decent sized drainage holes, it doesn't allow the soil to wash through and start coming out on the,
right.
on the, yep. you know, the decking or the patio or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, put something at the base of that so that those holes do not get clogged up. I love broken clay pots because when I break those, you take a concave side. It's got that void on the bottom and it never gets clogged up. Now, there are some people, if they have sizable containers, they'll use water bottles like this, Ernie,
uh-huh.
and they'll put the tops back on and the water bottles, the plastic bottles, you know, 2-liter bottle, whatever, and they'll put those in the bottom to make the pot lightweight, but it also creates a void where you're not spending a lot of money on soil.
Oh, I get you.
And you're also reducing the weight of the pot. Now, keep this in mind. If the pot's really light and it's of size and you have taller things in it and it's windy, you're risking that pot getting blown over and perhaps becoming damaged.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, once you determine what you're going to put in the bottom of the pot, do me a favor. Buy a good soil. Don't buy that 99 cents topsoil bag at wherever. Because of the price.
Mm-hmm.
You will pay the price. You know, that stuff stays wet. It's muck. You don't know where it came from. There's weed seed in it. There's all kinds of garbage in mm-hmm. it. I love Fertilume soil. Now, there's other good soils out there. Happy Frog, Ocean Forest, you name it. But I always like to use Fertilume soil. I like to mix it 50-50 with a garden topsoil. It's a topsoil from Garden Magic. And that combination, if you were to look at those two soils side by side, and when you marry the two,
mm-hmm.
and things are in harmony,
oh yeah,
it's a great, great container mix.
We love harmony.
We love harmony. Everybody has to get along.
That's right.
So, you know, getting that soil is of the essence. And when we come back, I'm going to tell you, once you get things put in there, we're going to talk about the thriller, filler, and spiller, and what you need to do to fertilize.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we've been talking a little bit about your containers, how to get them looking beautiful, and what you should be putting in them. Tony's got a perfect formula.
Well, I don't know if I had the perfect formula. Everyone has a little bit... Everyone's tastes are a little different. I like things that are monochromatic. I say it all the time. But certainly you can jazz up your containers or your pots any way, fashion, or form, however you feel, whatever it is you want to do. It's your artwork.
All right.
I call it artwork. But, you know, we talked about selecting the pot.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about making sure there's ample drainage, that you have good, you know, you have a number of drain holes in the pot.
Right.
We talked about putting things at the bottom of the pot. We talked about the soil.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's talk about the plants.
Okay.
The plants, that's where it all comes into play. It's like the cake. It's like making that perfect cake, right?
Are
you a baker?
I'm an eater.
You're an eater. There you go. So we talk about containers all the time, and I never coined this phrase, but I'm going to say it again. Whoever did, it was perfect. You know, you have to look at it in three ways, three components. One is a thriller. Uh-huh. That is the item that says, hey, look at me. It could be taller in a pot, or it could be, you know, whatever you want it to be the focal point.
The boldest.
The boldest. The thank right. you. Or the biggest.
I like
biggest. You.
Yeah.
You know, a big pot, we put you in the middle. So you're looking for the thriller. A thriller can be a number of different things. And as we're talking about the fall season, start looking for some of these items at your local garden centers and nurseries. Millet. Millet has really been popular in recent years. The seed heads, you know, they're several inches long, tall, spiky looking, really cool looking. And one, you know, in particular, I'm going to throw a couple out here. Purple Baron, really cool ornamental millet. Also, Jade Princess is a really interesting looking millet. So those could be one of your thrillers. A lot of people like that purple fountain grass, Penicillium rubrum. You know, it's got those little like cattails, and it's in its prime right now. You're starting to see the beautiful plumes that Penicillium rubrum can give you. Obviously, a lot of people like to use still the spikes, but these are a couple of items that you can use in the center of your pot or in the back of the pot to give you a little bit of structure, a little bit of height.
Right.
You know, another one too is the new celosia called Dragon's Breath. Really cool foliage. Gets a red, dark red blood color bloom.
Ooh.
That could be used as a thriller as well.
Perfect for this time of year, too.
Oh, absolutely.
Fall decoration.
And it can get up to, you know, you'll probably see it around 18, 24 inches. So that's a nice thriller. So
yeah.
That's a nice height element to it. So those are just a couple of things that can come into play with some containers. Now, you're certainly not going to put something that tall in your window box unless you have other things that will pair up well with it.
Draw the eye around
from, you know, from a symmetrical standpoint. You know, you don't want something in there that's like 2 foot tall in the center and things out on the side it's only several inches.
Pebbles.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, what if you were talking about how you want the eye to wander around your container? What if you want something to sort of cascade over it or creep along the outside?
Okay.
What do you
put
there?
That could be a number of things, and that leads us to, other than a thriller that takes center stage, some of the fillers. And a good one, you know, when it comes to some of the fillers, and don't be afraid to mix in some perennials with your containers. You know, the heucheras. Those are wonderful additions to containers, and it's all about the foliage with heuchera or heucherella. You know, you're going to see one or the other or perhaps both at your local garden centers and nurseries. Some of the colors of the foliage of heuchera and heucherella are so stunning. You know, the blooms that they give you are really somewhat, you know, they're spiky. I consider them to be a little insignificant, so to speak. But those who are familiar with heucheras and heucherella, it's the foliage, you know, caramel, obsidian's got this dark, dark colored foliage with these like pink splashes on it. So those are wonderful additions to some of your pots. Those could be fillers along with something like, Rudbeckia. You'll see some of that stuff in your local garden centers and nurseries. The Herta series, which the jury for me is still out. I don't know if it's truly that hardy or not. You might see it as such. But I still sometimes think that's questionable, and I hope my peers don't call me out on it. But it's still one of those that, you know, it's wonderful to work with in your containers. Pansies. Obviously, pansies really give you a big bang for your buck. A lot of color in your containers, something to choose from. The blotched faces are just stunning. You know, you can't go wrong. And talking about pansies, there's one that really cascades over, and I think that's what you might have been leading up to.
Yeah.
And that is a series called Cool Wave.
I love the name.
Cool Wave.
Yeah.
And they're wonderful in hanging baskets, too. So don't be afraid to experiment a little bit with the Cool Wave pansies. They love the cool temperatures, and they give you that cool, wavy, textured growth habit. And those would be nice coming out over the side of the pot. You still might even find at your local nurseries and garden centers, some of us are still carrying some of the million bells that are in the fall colors, the yellow tones, the orange tones. Petunias do well, too. If you can find some petunias in cooler temperatures, they do relatively well. Hmm. So don't be afraid to add those to your boxes or to some of your containers. What else can I think of? You know, potato vines still, you know, cut some of that back or try and work with some of what you already have in your pot, if at all possible.
Right.
But some of them are kind of tired. I've seen some of those tired pots in the neighborhood when I'm driving around.
Yeah.
You know who you are.
Yeah.
Get out to your local garden centers and nurseries and fix them up.
Now, sometimes potato vines can just overrun or overtake.
You think
is,
so?
Is there, yeah, is there a potato vine that is, I guess, not as aggressive as taking over everything?
You know, there is, as a matter of fact. The Bright Ideas series. Uh-huh. Not as crazy, so to speak. You know, it's almost like I envision when I see Marguerite, the old standby lime green potato vine.
Uh-huh.
It's like your wash machine. You put too much soap powder in it,
mm-hmm.
and it just foams out.
Right,
keeps going over the edge of the wash machine and along the floor. It's comical. And what's funny, everybody thinks that's the go-to. And don't get me wrong. You know, it has its place.
Right.
And I was riding up through a little town the other day, and all their pots out on the street side, all it was green potato vine. Ooh, that's pretty. Really pretty.
Low maintenance.
Mix it up, will you?
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie. Your local home and garden guys, and as Tony said earlier, mum is the word. When we come back, we're going to touch on a few things you might want to know about some mums, because everyone wants to get them out and get that fall color. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We are going to touch on mums here in just a few minutes. But, Tony, we have Jane on the line from Dayton who's got a question about our pansies. Will they winter over in porch pots or containers? Good morning, Jane. Thanks for the call.
Good morning. How are you guys?
Doing well. What's your favorite pansies?
Well, I don't know. What kind will winter over?
Well, for the most part, most pansies will. For example, we carry a pansy called Sub Zero, and really, it's really the Delta series. And you'll see things go under different names, but your situation is going to be a little different. Anytime you plant in a container, a window box, and things are above ground when you go through the winter months,
right?
It's Russian roulette. Okay.
Russian roulette. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, they might make it and they may not. The sooner you can get pansies rooted in, the better.
Right.
You know, I wouldn't count on them wintering over in a container or window box. They very well may. And for this reason only, you know, you're up close to the house. You have somewhat of that protected element from the home during the winter months.
What I was kind of thinking. I was thinking, okay, if it's up close to the house,
right.
I thought, you know, I'm pretty sure that, you know, because they are above ground, and if it gets really cold, then they're going to freeze and not come back.
You know what? And give it a shot, because you want to decorate those window boxes anyway.
Right.
And, you know, just if you're up close to the house, we all have our own little microclimates around our home. And if we have a relatively mild winter, they'll probably make it.
Okay.
If it's not, then so be it. We drop back, we punt, we regroup.
Okay.
Now, the Sub-Zero pansies I was telling you about, you know, that's just a little tag name they put on it. They'll guarantee purchases up to $15 for homeowners if and only if you plant those in the ground.
Okay.
You know, things in the ground stay constant. Things above ground fluctuate as a result of temperatures going up and temperatures going down.
Correct. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. So, I want to get some put out. My yard is fairly large, and I can put a lot in the ground, but I was thinking about up on my deck and, you know, around the house. I wanted to get some pretty colors up there.
Yeah, no, go for it. Who do you visit most often up in the Dayton area, garden center-wise?
Well, this is Dayton, Kentucky.
Dayton, Kentucky. Oh, okay.
Yeah, so Jackson.
Oh, thank you.
And what's the Highland Heights?
Highland Heights, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And, you know, what's really cool with the pansies this time of year, they have some really interesting names. For example, you know, in the Delta series, you might find one called Wine and Cheese Mix.
Mm-hmm.
So you get that dark color and that light color. It's got that yellowish hue to it, golden hue. Also the Matrix Orange. And also there's a black pansy, too.
Oh, really?
So you can take that and mix it up and go into Halloween and get a little spooky if you want with your
winter boxes. That would be cool.
Yeah.
Because I'm getting the mums and all of that. I'm And I had talked to you before about some of the mums that my mother-in-law gave me 20 years ago that spread all over the place.
Oh, you got, yeah, you got some of those more reliable mums.
Yeah.
Yes.
I just have to keep pulling them up and, you know, trying to keep them contained and trimmed off. And you gave me good advice about trimming them after July the 4th.
That's the key. And, you have some of those older varieties. And unfortunately, as Ernie and I, you know, we're going to talk more about mums.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Boy, we've lost a little bit of that credibility with them from a hardiness standpoint. Not all, but mm-hmm. some. But, you know, that's, unfortunately, that's part of the trade-off, getting new varieties, different colors. You know, we sometimes lose that hardiness element.
Right.
But, keep gardening on. Send us some photos if you ever get on Facebook of your window boxes. We would certainly love to see them.
Okay. Thank you.
All right.
Thanks, Jane.
I love your show.
Thank you.
Have a great weekend.
Bye.
Thank you very much. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Make sure you take the time to jump onto our Facebook page. It's a great way to stay connected with us and post questions and post pictures. And everyone wants that picture-perfect mom out in the front of their house to say, welcome, fall.
Oh, we all do.
Yeah.
You know, it's just... It's the mainstay of the garden. It's the fall plant, you know, amongst other things. Don't get me wrong.
No.
I love asters. You know, asters are beautiful when they're in bloom, and I love that blue color in them. You know, you can find the pink. You can find some of the white. There's one that I have people ask for often, and you don't always see it on the availability. It's one called Purple Dome because it's a butterfly attractor.
Oh, really?
Yeah, good old Purple Dome. You know, that's they I think that's under the classification, and I shouldn't say this, some of the New England asters.
Gotcha.
That are a little more resilient and hardy.
I want to find out a little bit more about that and some more mums, but Tony, we have Denny, our bird man, on the line. Thanks, Denny, for holding on. How are you today?
I'm fine. How about you guys?
Doing
well. And Denny, it's ironic that you've called this morning. Coincidental. I was thinking about you the other day when I was up in Atlantic City for a garden center convention. You know, a lot of us from the tri-state area. I saw a lot of the guys from over at Burger Farm up there, and Baton's and Robbins and so forth. We all, you know, we get together and go to this fall show. And the reason why I thought of you is because I bought this display with the hummingbird swings.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, Denny was talking about those, and I can't wait to get them in for the spring season. But you came to thought, Denny, since you're our bird guy and bird expert.
No wonder my ears are burning.
Oh, good.
the hummingbirds are still around.
Yeah.
I expect them to be around at least until October.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, they usually leave during the migration, winter migration or whatever, but, you know, they usually stick around until about October. That's when the daylight lasts long enough for them to be around, so. But the main thing I called today about was ask you about some plants I got.
Sure.
Begonias.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of weeks ago, I had begonias in containers and stuff, and they still had blooms and leaves and stuff on them, and then all of a sudden... It just seems like I went out yesterday to water them again and stuff, and all the blooms and leaves are gone.
Hmm. Something doesn't sound good there. Denny, are those in a container, or are they in the ground?
They're in a container.
Okay. And we were just talking a moment ago about drainage. Are you getting good drainage?
Yeah. I water them through like I usually do, you know, let them drip out the bottom and everything like that. You know, they got good good drainage on them and everything. But it just seems like the last couple of weeks, you know, some of my begonias, or some of them, have just lost their blooms and their leaves.
Interesting. What type of begonias?
I'm not exactly sure. I know one of them was the dragon wing.
Okay.
It was going fine. It had beautiful red flowers on it and everything like that. And then all of a sudden this week, just the red flowers are all laying on the ground, and some of the leaves are laying down there, too. So.
Well, I know the dragon wing... has a tendency to drop a lot of its blooms.
Yeah.
Okay, there's no doubt about it. When you start talking about the leaves dropping, you know, the foliage, you know, that's another thing. You might see that it happen occasionally, or if something's brushing up against it, so to speak. But are they starting to look really thin and anemic?
No, not really. No. The stems are still looking strong and good color to them and everything.
Then maybe it's just cycling up and cycling down, you know. But
it could be. I didn't know if begonias were annuals or what. So.
The dragon wings, they are annuals. And I know the dragon wing in particular will drop a lot of its blooms. And you're sacrificing getting a lot of blooms all over the ground, so to speak, versus, they give you that long bloom period.
Right. They've been blooming all summer.
They have a tendency just to drop, some of their blooms. And that's the only downside to the dragon wing, in my opinion, but still, I love it. It's a great performer. And it sounds as if you're dropping some of the bloom, that's normal.
Yeah.
Foliage is another thing, but if it's still thick and, the plant looks green and healthy, don't worry about it. But you can get a Botrytis in begonias real quick if they're staying too wet or you don't have really good drainage in containers.
Mm. Well, I was just wondering because I got some other begonias that still have the leaves on them and stuff, but I'm thinking about getting ready to bring everything in, and I'm just trying to decide what to bring in and what not to bring in.
Well,
I do the black and blue salvias once a year and stuff.
Right,
so.
And there's people that have told me that the black and blue salvia has come back as a perennial for them.
Has it?
That's what I've heard. So I've not experienced it, but I've heard that. But what I really want you to pay attention to, I'm going to go back to those dragon wing begonias. Make sure, if you start seeing anything with a powdery look on top of the foliage or maybe even underneath, don't even bring it in. You start getting things like that, then it's time to switch out the soil, empty the container or the pot or the window box. Use one part bleach to nine parts water and sanitize those containers and start new. If not, you're going to fall right back into the same trap as you did the prior season.
Okay, because all the begonias I've had this year have done really great.
Mm-hmm. For the most part, things have. And I will tell you this, it's been a bizarre season. And it seems like we're saying that every year. It's just, we had all that rain.
And things like that, it's been kind of rough on some plants, so.
Been rough on me, not just plants.
Yeah, me too.
Trust me.
I got to stay in when it gets too hot. So.
I'm in a greenhouse, and I could lose 2 or 3 pounds in a day.
Yeah, I can imagine. I've also got some petunia, but it's still blooming. It's been blooming all summer. It's still got blooms on it and stuff. It's still doing good. So.
Yeah, and give them a little bit of a haircut.
Yeah.
And then as we get a little cooler, they'll do well, especially the waves, too, in the ground. And real quick. A great fertilizer for petunias is Jack's Classic Petunia Feed.
Right.
It has iron in it, and I'm telling you, they are junkies for that.
I guess that's why it's been going so good.
If you're using Jack's, you're in. All right.
I do use some of it now and then in the container and everything like that. I got it in the container, and like I said, the petunia's been doing great all summer long, and it's still got blooms on it. So.
Perfect. Well, keep us updated with the Hummers and whatever else is going on in the bird world.
Oh, no problem. Like I said, if you have any questions or whatever, you can always call me.
Will do. Thanks, Denny.
So, have yourself a good day.
You too. Bye.
749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have Jerry on the line. Jerry, please hold on. We'll come to you right out of the break. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Little madness there to get things right back into the flow of things. It's been mad around here with a lot of calls, which is fantastic, and we love it. We're happy to help out our listeners. We have Jerry on the line. Tony, who got an interesting situation here. Large, sandy part of the yard, and how do you get grass to grow over top of it? Was there a pool there one time, Jerry?
No, what they had there was a trampoline. They had a trampoline there, and I just want to know the best way to get grass to grow there. If we have to take the sand out, we'll do that, but I was looking for an alternate not to do that.
Right. Well, I would encourage you to take the sand out for two reasons only, for the most part. One is, if you go down to Great American Ballpark, that's more of a sandy soil, and they're watering all the time, they're fertilizing all the time. Okay. So you risk that area drying out because it's sandy.
Water goes through the sand.
Exactly. Water will permeate through that sand, and therefore you're having to water a lot more often. And here's the other important element, too. There really isn't a nutrient value whatsoever with sand.
Okay.
And therefore, fertilization and the watering element, unless you're on top of it and you're a groundskeeper, dig it out. And I would, if it were me, I would want about 4 to 6 inch layer of topsoil over top of that area.
Okay. And, 4 to 6 inches.
Yeah. Okay. And, you know, if there's a little bit of sand underneath, that's fine. You'll still get some decent drainage. But that top layer is very important. And you'll be glad that you did. And you'll have that nutrient element about the soil there for the turf to be healthy.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, have a good one, Jerry. Thank you.
749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Tony, we have Diane on the line from Mount Washington. She's got mushrooms in her yard.
Shrooms.
Yeah. Diane, how big is your yard?
It's a small yard, and they tend to form in the front yard where there's a slope downward.
Okay. And I take it, do you have drainage problems or moisture, or is there does water sit there?
No, not really. It's just that we are at the bottom of two hills, and it almost like converges right there.
Right.
Yeah.
How long, Diane, have you been in the home? How long have you lived there? 9 years. Were there ever any trees there in those areas?
No.
Mm-mm. Typically, you know, when you see mushroom activity in a lawn, it has to do with the decaying process of what's underneath the soil surface. And a lot of times, you know, it's just fungal matter. It's decaying wood. As the moisture breaks down the wood, you get mushroom spore activity. Nothing to be concerned about or alarmed about. But there's really, I wouldn't recommend you do anything.
Okay.
It's just one of those things. Do you water a lot? You water your lawn often?
No.
Hmm. I know that. Are they there present now?
They are there. It's only been this summer, and you get rid of them, and then about 3 weeks later, they crop up. But we do have a lot of raccoon activity, neighborhood cats, and I thought that they mentioned animal droppings might.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I guess that's always a plausible reason behind it. But typically, it's just the right amount of moisture in the ground. Now, we had a lot of rain in July. So, coupled with, you know, if there's any, like, wood underneath the ground, you know, from old trees or roots, you know, tree roots go rather far out, too. So, they don't just stop always at the drip line. And a lot of times, if there's anything under the ground decaying, you know, that's the reason for, you know, take a hand trowel out there around some of those mushrooms and just dig down around them and see if there is any wood underneath.
Okay.
You know, but again, you don't need to spray anything. Usually when it's dry, you don't see as much activity with mushrooms as you do when you get a lot of moisture.
Okay.
All right. Yeah. I'm sorry I don't have any more to add to it, but that's pretty much it in a nutshell.
Okay.
Thanks. All right. Have a good weekend.
You too.
749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie. And Tony, we have Michael from Latonia, who has some interesting challenges. He's got annuals that keep dying and then coming back. And I think you hit the nail on the head. We need to get a hold of the Long Island medium and find out what's going on.
And you have her number, don't you?
I do.
What is her name? I forgot.
I'm not really sure.
Oh, come on.
I know my wife knows.
You go to all those seances and tarot card readings and all that stuff. You're all swept up in it. You know, Michael, what do you have? What particular annuals are giving you this... I'm a die and then come back.
I'm not really sure. I can't remember. Like I said, I bought them back in the springtime.
Mm-hmm.
I tore out. It had these Japanese lanterns or Chinese lanterns. Me and my wife bought this house about 2 years ago. It'll be 2 years in October. And I tore out all of this stuff. It just overgrew the front of the house. So I tore it all out. I took about 6 inches of dirt out because it was just mounted up so high from over the years of, I guess, the mulching net.
Mm-hmm.
And I poured it all out, and I tilled it up, and, you know, mixed it up real well. And I had a lot of brick in it from, I guess, when they bricked the house or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I just, you know, I planted these annuals thinking that they, you know, they'd get, you know, 4 to 6 inches tall, make, you know, something, you know, not too big. But these things have absolutely exploded, and it's overtaken the front of the flower bed, which is fine with me. I mean, it looks beautiful with the house,
mm-hmm.
but they, you know, it just seems like they'll come all, you know, they'll bloom real good, and then they'll die, you know, like the flower will go away.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get another rain, and boom, they explode again with, you know, the color.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you say that, because just imagine these guys being on the playground with a bunch of other kids. They don't play well in the landscape bed with other things. They're rather, you know, they're invasive. They're bullies. And what you're seeing is a lot of the reseeding activity.
Yeah, well, see, this is all from the same, I mean, it's from the same plant. You know, they're not reseeding or anything. It's just from the same plant itself.
Huh.
I've never, you know, I've got sort of a green thumb, so I've never seen anything like this. And I was just wondering, you know, what, I don't know if it's the skirt that it's in, you know, because I water them like every 2 or 3 days just to keep them nice and healthy. And, you know, we went on vacation back in July, the last week of July, and they were, you know, kind of like dying. I'm thinking, okay, it's the end of the life for them. We go on vacation for a week. We come back, and they exploded in color. I'm like, what in the world? And they've done it like 2 or 3 times.
Yeah, no. Well, they spread by rhizomes, too, you know. So you have a number of things going on. You know, they're reseeding. Okay. They're spreading by rhizomes and keeping the soil moist. It's just one of those things that's like, hey, I got a nice drink. I got another little burst of energy. You know, you're going to have to dig a lot of that up and get rid of it, if in fact it's bothering you that bad.
It wasn't bothering me. It was just really, I've never seen it. I, you know, I figured I'd give you guys a call. You know, when I go to work on Saturdays, I listen to you guys. You have great information.
Well, thank you.
I use around my house. And, you know, it's just, I've never seen anything like it. It's
weird. You can have them for years.
Now, you know, I bought them from Home Depot, so I'll give Home Depot credit. And they had some really good deals going on when I bought it. And, you know, I'm very pleased with how it turned out and stuff like that.
Sure.
Now, I want to plant a couple bushes out in front of my yard.
Okay.
What would be a good bush? Not too tall, doesn't get very wide, kind of low maintenance. What would be a good bush to plant? Just I guess, you know, make kind of like a barrier.
So how much sun exposure?
100%.
A lot of sun?
Yeah.
Are you thinking evergreen, or are you thinking something that's deciduous that drops its foliage? Does it matter?
I was thinking kind of an evergreen. That way it keeps it, you know, throughout the year, and it looks nice.
Kind of low. One of my favorite evergreens, I don't talk about it often. It's a holly. And it's called Emerald Green.
Okay.
Beautiful, beautiful dark colored foliage to it. And it stays rather low. It's compact, very tidy looking. A lot of people like to put them in containers.
Okay.
That would be something certainly I would consider doing. Another evergreen arborvita, one called Mr. Bowling Ball. Ernie like that. Stays perfectly round. My friend has one down the street. He had in containers, and then he finally put them in his landscape bed. They're probably got a little taller than what I thought that it would, but it's more around the 3 foot range.
Okay.
That's a great performer. Fire Chief is another arborvitae that I like. It's got some beautiful green in it, and on the tips with the sun that you're getting, you'll get this gorgeous red hue. So, hence the name Fire Chief. It's got that fiery look to it. Of course, one of my old favorites is, too, the Boxwood Green Velvet. That would be another. Those four right there would be really good to consider, seriously consider, as something keeping you, you know, in that evergreen kind of mode, so to speak.
All right. So, if I went to, like, you know, came to Jackson or, you know, went to Highland Heights. But, you know, I'm from Campbell County, so I know pretty much all of Campbell County.
Yeah.
If I just went up and said, hey, you know, I'm looking for, you know, this bush called, you know, Fire Chief, you know, they'll know what I'm talking about.
Now, not everybody may have all that stuff in, but, you know, you have a couple there to work with. And just see what's available. You have over there in Campbell County. You have so Smith and Jolly. They're pretty far out on 27 there. You have Highland Garden Center. Obviously, you have Fort Thomas Garden Center. Just, you know, call around, see who has what. But those are the four that I would kind of be looking for. And you're not going to go wrong.
All
Alrighty.
And let us know how it goes. Keep us in the loop, okay?
Yeah, I will definitely, once I get back to the house, and I'm a firefighter, so I'm actually working all weekend.
Perfect.
But once I get back to the house on Monday, I will, I'll send a picture in to you guys and show you,
what
these flyers are doing.
Perfect. And you know what? Support your locals over there. They are the cornerstone of Campbell County, so support your local businesses. And stay in touch with us. All right, Michael. Have a good weekend.
Thanks.
Yep, you too. Thanks.
749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys, coming up at 8 o'clock. We got a couple of our friends going to be visiting us from Arling House, and we're also going to reach back and talk about those mums, as we mentioned a few minutes ago. We need to pause. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Make sure you stay connected with us by jumping on our Facebook page. You can also email us at in and around the house at b105.com. Woo.
That was a good run. A great run, right?
Yes, it was. Yeah. Always wonderful to hear from our listeners, and it's a great opportunity for us to help out wherever we possibly can. And we want to help you get that spectacular look in the fall.
Most definitely.
Mum's the word.
Mum's the word. And yeah, that was a heck of a run. It's almost, for me, like people coming into the garden center.
Yeah. You get stoked, don't you?
You get stoked. You do get stoked. Uh-huh. But mum's the word. And, you know, get out to your local garden centers and nurseries. You're going to see an abundance of mums. And keep in mind, most are still tight. When I say that, the buds have yet to really open up and give us that burst of color. But don't worry.
That's okay.
It's been awfully hot. You don't want them opening up and getting into full bloom, so to speak, and all this heat and some hard rains, because you lose that longevity element. So we're wanting those to come in a little bit later, which they are, obviously. Mm-hmm. They're a couple weeks behind because of the heat. So that's why you're still seeing them tight, which is perfectly okay. Don't fret it. And they will open up, and they will give you some wonderful color.
Now, since they're late opening, does that mean they'll last longer during the
Perhaps
fall season?
That's what we're hoping for. Because as they open, you get some nice, you know, fall temperatures, cool weather, without any torrential downpours and hard rains. You just get that longevity element out of the mums, and they can take you all the way up until you first get that hard freeze, couple of hard frost. Mm-hmm. They'll take it. And what's really interesting, too, some mums, not all, but most, when they start getting that frost and those cool temperatures, although they may start out and open up in full bloom one color, they'll kind of gradually fade off to an interesting color, like the yellows. They'll turn a little whitish in color and take on a different hue. And yeah, it doesn't look all that bad.
Huh.
And then, you know, I love the white, but the white will brown.
Okay.
So, you know, just to kind of give you an idea, some colors just change different colors as they progress on in age, and, you know, the temperatures all come into play. It's all about weather.
I guess maybe it's because of the, you know, the pumpkins and the fall decorations, but those orange mums are the ones that really catch my eye.
Oh, the most, well, the yellow pop.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you'll see yellow from a distance. I mean, it just screams. Mm-hmm. I love the rust-colored mums, the orange mums. I really like the red, too. There's even pink. There's a number of different colors of mums out there. It's from A to Z. And look for Belgian mums. You know, they're pretty, you know, resilient. You know, a lot of times they'll come back. We talk about the true hardiness of mums. And a lot of people, they get on the fence and it's like, I don't want to call them hardy mums. But for the most part, they're pretty daggone reliable. Don't worry about it.
Right.
You know, just plant them. Sooner you get them into the ground, the better, because they're shallow rooted.
Okay.
And because of that, you know, when we put them out on the front porch or on the stoop or on the steps, they're not in the ground. Guess what? They're not getting rooted in. And then after they bloom, we get later into the fall season, then you plant them. They're still confined to that pot.
What about prepping the area or the container or the landscape bed for the mums? What do you do?
You're hoping you have, if you're the type of homeowner, gardener, that your beds are in great shape, you don't have to really do a lot of prep at all.
Just like me?
Yeah. And sometimes you'll find mums, they'll come in fiber pots. You can plant that fiber pot all in the ground. It will eventually break down, and the root system will get out. It also helps protect the roots, you know, kind of, you know, it's almost like an insulation.
Mm-hmm. And what about watering?
Water mums when they need to be watered. they, you know, when I say that, I like to let them just ever so slightly start to show you that, that wilt look.
Uh-huh.
Like, yeah, hey, I need a drink. Like, bartender, come over here.
Yeah.
The bartender that's right in front of you, that doesn't see you. And you're like, I know you see me, dude. I'm 6'4", I weigh 235. Don't tell me. Don't make me come over that's there. But
the next time we're out having some libations, I'm going to look for that wilt look from you. When I see the wilt look from you, I know it's time to get another round.
If bartenders could just pick up on that wilt look, we'd all be good, wouldn't we? You think that's funny?
That is good. It's great. And I'm going to use that and reuse that a lot.
My dad's favorite saying is, I'm not a camel.
That's right. Yeah,
you know, you come back with some beers or something, he'll look at somebody and say, what do I look like? I'm a camel? Pretty good.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie. We'll come back to our mom story here in just a minute, but we have Debbie from Ripley on the line who has a question about fertilizing raised flower beds. What do you have in the beds, Debbie?
Nothing really. When we made this flower bed.
Uh-huh.
I got some dirt from our local construction company that they have the mulch and the rock and all of that.
Right.
And there was a bunch of clods of dirt. It wasn't very good dirt. Mm-hmm. But we've had it for like 2 years now, and we got landscape rock in there because our neighbor had a cat problem with our neighbor, and we didn't want to put mulch in there because using it for a litter box.
Oh. So,
yeah, but my flowers just, we water, and it just doesn't seem, they just die. The ones that we have in the ground, or in the pots, are beautiful, but not in my flower bed.
Mm-hmm. Well, you really drove something home there when you said from a local construction company. Typically, you know, you said they were like clods.
Yes, and roots and...
Yeah, so that's telling me a lot of heavy clay content. That's not really broken down, so to speak, lacking some other amendments. And you just used that alone, didn't you?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, in those situations, and I say this often, when you're working on raised beds, that is the perfect opportunity for you as a homeowner to get that soil just right. Because you're bringing it in, you're the one that's selecting what's coming in, and that's why that's important. I would add peat moss to that. I would add compost. Our friends over at Hafner's and Sons, you know, they'll sell compost and all those good soil amendments and mix in there, and I would till that in. And you don't need to put...
Okay.
And when you said stone, I guess I'm not truly following that.
It's a little landscape rock.
Okay. So you're mulching with decorative stone. Okay.
Yes.
I got it. And
but
you know...
I guess the mulch around... flowers, maybe just around the perimeter of the flowers.
Uh-huh.
Because I thought maybe the rock was dry in the flower bed. I mean, if all the rain we've had, the flower bed still looks dry.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I water until I just literally soak it, but it's still, flowers are not growing. I have one that really took off, and that's it.
What was the one plant that took off?
I don't know. I don't even know what it was, but it's the full plant. It's got yellow blooms all over it, and it almost kind of reminds you of a little tiny daisy, but I'm not sure what it is.
Is it a Rudbeckia? You know, there's some things that likes that kind of dry soil, but what I would do, how deep is the bed? Let me
it's
ask.
It's about, I would say it's probably three landscape bricks high.
Okay. You know, I would pull the stone out. I would add peat moss to that. Pine fine. Is it a large bed? So I'm creating some work for you, aren't I?
Yeah.
That's the kind of guy I am. Well, you know, you're answering your own question here. You just hit the nail on the head. You're struggling. So do you want to keep struggling with some things growing in there, or do you want to just regroup? You know.
Yeah.
You know the old saying. You know, when you come back a second time, you had enough time to do that. But add some compost to that soil. Peat moss is another great soil amendment. Posy power is another soil amendment. Pine fines. And till that in, and you should have a nice mixture. But I would lean towards compost.
Okay. Okay.
So topsoil compost. Call up our good friends over at Hafner's and Sons. They also have perennial bed mixtures, just various soil mixtures. And
okay.
You're starting off on the right foot, and you're going to be a happier gardener. You really will.
Yeah. I'm not happy right now with those.
And I think your original...
We spent on those plants.
Exactly. You know, that's putting... We say it all the time, it's putting a $100 plant in a $10 hole.
Yeah.
It just doesn't work. It really doesn't. And I think part of your question here, too, is I wanted to go back. I think John mentioned something about fertilization. When you're fertilizing... I love the Espoma products. And in your situation, I would put like plant tone in that garden bed and just let it work its way into the soil as you amend it throughout the winter months. And then you'll have a nice slate to start from in the spring.
Okay, plant tone, is that what you called it?
Uh-huh, from Espoma. And you can buy it in like an 18-pound bag at one of your local garden centers and nurseries.
Okay.
And when you mix things together, mix it in with your soil. It's eating well. You'll notice a huge difference. And please follow up with us.
Yes, I will let you. I'll send you pictures next year.
Perfect. What garden center are you close to?
We're in Ripley, and we do have a Lowe's, and we have a Tractor Supply and a Southern States.
You might try Southern States. You know, just call around and see who carries plant tone from Espoma. And
okay.
Also, like
I'm
said,
I'm in Cincinnati too, so I can.
Yeah. Get with one of your local garden centers, and you're going to be put right in the right direction.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. You have a wonderful weekend.
Thanks.
You
bye.
Too. Bye-bye.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Still have a lot of ground to cover, and a couple of Facebook questions have come our way. We'll check that in just a minute. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And Tony, we have Gina on the line. Good morning, Gina. Thanks for hanging on.
Well, thank you for having me.
It has been a busy day for us, and we appreciate your patience.
Well, thank you.
Good morning, Gina. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Tony?
We're doing well. So tell us a little bit about what's going on with the Master Gardener program out there in Boone County.
Well, the Boone County Extension Service is going to host the Master Gardener program. It will begin this Thursday, December the 1st, and will go all the way through March. We have 15 classes, and it will begin from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m.
Well, what exactly is a Master Gardener?
Well, the objective of this is a volunteer organization to support educational activities of the University of the Kentucky Cooperative Extension Service.
Uh-huh.
They also operate for scientific and educational purposes, promoting horticulture education and a service to the community, and provide continuing horticulture enrichment for volunteers.
Gotcha. And how does somebody become a Master Gardener, June?
Well, first of all, you need to call the Boone County Cooperative Extension Office at 859-586-6101. And you can contact myself, Gina Ligon, or Joe Smith, and we can get you an application in order to start the process.
Okay, what was that phone number one more time? It just sort of garbled there for a moment.
This is 859-586-6101.
Great.
You know, Gina, you said something the other day about this, and I never thought much about it, but it's not just limited to people in Kentucky. People from Ohio or Indiana can also participate in this program. Is that right?
Yes, we welcome people from Indiana, Ohio. We have many wonderful volunteers from all three states.
That's awesome. I know that I think it's a great foundation to build upon. And you guys do a wonderful job out there in Boone County. Also, our extension agents out in Kenton and Campbell. And I can't thank you guys enough. And I do my best to get people directed in your direction when there are some plant issues and certain things that aren't always easily identifiable, and you guys do a wonderful job, and the response is so quick, it's awesome.
Well, thank you.
I sincerely mean that. And real quick, too, before we let you go,
okay.
Tell us a little bit about the Autumn Affair event and when that's going to take place.
The Autumn Affair event is actually going to happen in October. It will happen at St. Timothy's Church in Union, Kentucky on October the 14th. To find out more information, you can go on to the Boone County Arboretum's website. or you can contact our office again at 859-586-6101 and contact Lacey Kessel.
And perfect. How much does it cost to become a master gardener? Is it expensive or?
It does have a cost to it. It is $250 mm-hmm. for in-state, which is Kentucky residents. For out-of-state, for Ohio and Indiana, it is $300.
Okay.
But you can get a $100 reimbursement.
I see.
So once you complete the program, the 15 classes, and then you do 40 volunteer educational hours at our approved sites in Boone, Kenton, or Campbell counties, once you complete all of that, you can get a $100 reimbursement.
Oh, great. Yeah. Love reimbursements.
Not a bad gig.
How do you get an application? And is there a deadline? Or
October the 1st is when the applications need to be back to the Boone County Cooperative Extension Office. Mm-hmm. We only accept 30 participants for the program. So if anyone is really interested in participating and becoming a master gardener, they need to contact the Boone County office and get their application.
I got you.
All right, Tina, thank you very much. We'll touch base again next week before the deadline. How's that?
Thank you guys so much.
All right. Have a great weekend. Bye, Gina.
You too. Bye.
749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And Tony, we have Bev on the line from Hamilton. Wants to know if you have some ideas about moving an old-fashioned bush. And I guess maybe it's left over from the previous owner. Did I understand that right, Bev?
No, I planted it. When I was a child, my mother had one, and I went to a nursery and told them what it was, and they told me it was an old-fashioned snowball bush.
Oh, snowball bush. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Right. I thought it was old-fashioned drink.
Yeah,
I wasn't sure.
So too.
Old-fashioned snowball bush. Planted it at the corner of the house, and I did not remember them getting so large. Well, now it's taller than the house, and I need to move it. So I know I'm going to have to cut it back and dig mm-hmm. a very, very large hole.
Mm-hmm.
When is going to be my best time to move it?
When it drops its foliage this fall. And then you're obviously going to cut it back a little bit, and you're going to cut out some of the bloom for next year. But so uh-huh. so be it. I mean, you already know that.
Right.
Make sure you get as much of that root ball up. And now, the one okay. thing that I do not know that I can comment on is how well they transplant like that, especially being that large.
Uh-huh.
So that's something I would have to look into more. Just make sure you get as much of that root structure as you possibly can. I'm sure you have some sons or some friends that are big enough to move that big root ball. And cut yes. it, and definitely cut it back. It's a beautiful plant. It really is. And I would also have that. Make sure you have the new location prepped and ready to go, so you can make that transition rather easy.
Right.
And one other thing, I want to encourage you to use is a root stimulator product or another product from Espoma called Biotone uh-huh. with mycorrhiza to help the root structure get kicked off to a good start. And okay. do not use any high nitrogen fertilizers by any means. No. Use Fertilum's root stimulator or Espoma's Biotone.
Okay.
And let us know how the move goes. Huh?
How short can I cut it back and be safe that I don't hurt it?
Here's my other question, too. How tall is it? You said it's almost up to the...
It's like 10 foot tall.
Wow. I would cut it back a third.
Okay.
You know, is it real, how many, are there a lot of stems coming out of it?
Oh, yes.
Okay. Here's another tip. Yeah. What I would do is look inside down low, and some of the older stems, uh-huh. coming out at the base, it's the uh-huh. older, thicker stuff, I would cut some of that out. Okay? Not uh-huh. not any more than a third. Say there's like... say there's 12 big stems coming out of your shrub.
Uh-huh.
Okay, cut a third of those out. So cut like four
okay.
out.
Okay.
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 And then trim it back a little bit. You're going to sacrifice some bloom for next season. And then when the foliage drops, what else I would do right now, I would start spading around it. just to you know, get it loose. And you'll want to water it a little bit so you can work that soil where it's not all dry.
Uh-huh.
You have a task in front of you, that's for sure. But obviously, it's overgrown the spot that it's in.
Do they normally bloom twice in a year?
You could see that sometimes. Are you seeing some subsequent blooming midsummer, latter part of summer? Yeah.
Right now, I'm seeing some blooms.
Yeah, but
blooms
not as
early.
Right, not as profuse as the beginning, right?
No.
Right.
No.
That's common. But let us know how it goes, okay?
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks. Have a good weekend.
749 B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment. Coming back, we're going to visit with our friends from Watson's. And then we have our guest from Arling House coming up right after that. We'll be right back. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys, and time for you to be thinking about some hot spring spas. We have Greg on the line with us from Watson's and the five things you need to know about how to improve your overall health. Morning, Greg. Thanks for taking the call.
Glad to talk to you today, Ernie.
A lot of people may not really be thinking about how good spas are for you, but they're excellent, aren't they?
Yeah, they make you feel better, you sleep better, it relieves those old aches and pains that we all have. And you know what? At the end of the day, it's just great to bring the family or the loved ones together.
Mm-hmm. You know, it was just when you were talking about that, relieving the stress of everyday life.
Mm-hmm.
Is a great way to think about that. And tell me a little bit more about the hot spring spas. They have some specific jets designed to help you relieve that.
They do. So the hot spring spas are, all of the jets are engineered to provide the absolute best massage experience. So they're patented therapeutic jets. Mm-hmm. They're designed in muscle groups. They deliver powerful streams of water that you can really customize to the pressure that you want. Most jets that you look at in the industry, they're either constant flow or just a little bit of a spinning action. Mm-hmm. However, Hot Springs has this really cool jet called the Moto Massage. It's a unique jet that delivers two powerful streams of water that are going to sweep up and down the full length of your back, relieving that stress and tension and pain from your spinal column. There's nothing like it, Ernie.
Now, a lot of people also look at this and go, don't know if I want to commit all that time. What about the water? And Hot Springs has a unique way to make sure you have a lot of clean water.
They do, and you know, that's one of the biggest concerns that people have when they come in is, you know, tell me, you know, how much time is this going to take? How much money am I going to spend taking care of it? And Hot Springs is really committed to making the spa ownership as easy as possible. Most spas in the industry only filter about 25 to 50% of the water when you're in the spa using it. Hot Springs has an exclusive, it's 100% no bypass filtering system, which means that 100% of the water is filtered 100% of the time when you're inside of it enjoying it. This provides sparkling clean water with as little effort as possible, and you use about 1/6 of the chlorine that you would typically use on other spas.
Well, tell me a little bit too about saltwater hot tubs. That's kind of a hot thing right now too. A lot of people are interested in those.
It is. You know, saltwater is a buzzword in both the pool and spa industry right now. Hot Springs offers a virtual hands-free way to sanitize your water inside your spa. It's called the ACE Saltwater Water Care System. The secret to why this thing is so effective in cleaning your water is simple. It's called diamonds. You know, if charcoal was good at cleaning your water, diamonds is the charcoal on steroids.
Wow.
So the ACE system has proprietary diamond electrode that is capable of transforming just a very small amount of salt into a broad range of powerful and effective cleaners. Ultimately, Ernie, the benefits are that you're going to use fewer bottled products to maintain your water.
Mm-hmm.
The cleaners that are generated from the salt water are typically going to give you dry skin, itchy eyes, and an odor produced by chlorine that you're not going to get with salt water.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, you're going to get softer water that feels better on your skin, and it helps protect the hot tub from the harsh chemicals that are used.
You know, a lot of people are going to ask this question about how efficient is the hot tub. A lot of people think, oh, if I get a hot tub it's going to run all the time. My bills are going to be higher than normal. But with these new ones, they're pretty efficient.
They are. Hot Springs is always keeping every spa that they build with efficiency in mind. They've created an energy smart system that reduces energy consumption to save you money. So most spas typically have to kick on and off about 3 to 6 times an hour to heat and filter the water.
Mm-hmm.
Which results in, Ernie, you paying about $50 to $90 a month on your electrical bill for you to enjoy your hot tub.
Right.
So Hot Springs is using a low-amperage circulation pump that operates 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and uses less electricity than a 40-watt light bulb. They totally insulate their spas with multiple layers of high-density foam, which is going to protect the spa from being affected by the cold water or the cold outside temperatures. Hot Springs guarantee their spas in writing to never cost you more than $20 a month. And on top of that, they give you a 30-day money-back guarantee, which means this. If you buy a Hot Springs spa, and for any reason you're not in love with it after 30 days, we're going to come pick up the spa, refund your money, hassle-free. There's no other manufacturer or dealer that's going to do that for you.
Wow, that's really strong. That's very strong. And to say that you could get a hot tub and it's only going to cost you $20 a month just to enjoy it whenever you want to is outstanding. And what, Greg, the big question now is, what time's the best time to buy a spa?
You know, it's really going on right now. The month of September is always one of the best times to buy a hot tub from us at Watson's. We are currently receiving huge factory rebates from Hot Springs. We're offering 60 months interest-free financing, which we've never done before, which means that you can be enjoying a Hot Springs spa in your own backyard right now for only about $57 a month. And right now, you know, as we go into these cool nights, the winter weather, it's perfect for enjoying a spa with your friends and your family.
Yes, it is. Greg, give us some contact information so our listeners can reach out to you.
You know, it's really easy. We're at, you can find us on the Watsons.com, or you can dial us up on the phone at 513-326-1100.
Greg, thank you so much for your time and joining us here on the five things you need to know with In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys, and our friends from Arling House have joined us again. We're missing Brian. Apparently, he's out lollygagging and partying and whooping it up and taking it easy. But we have our friend Ryan and Nick has joined us to take Brian's place. Welcome, fellas.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks so much for coming back and visiting us. And every time we have you guys on, you seem to solve a lot of problems for our listeners. And it's been a crazy year for you, hasn't it?
It's been very wild, yeah. Business is, so to speak, booming.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a recession-proof industry, and the heat and the humidity this year have been, keeping us going nonstop. So
kind of, I think it's been a record year as far as the humidity we've had this summer.
Yeah.
It can be unbearable, and there's nothing worse than not having a good, cool place to hide or go to.
That's for sure.
But first of all, before we get started, we got a bunch of questions for you, but give us a little contact information. How can our listeners reach you? And
yeah, the telephone number is 859-727-9000. Our website is arlinghouseair.com, and you can also reach us through our Facebook page as well.
Isn't that Facebook thing just fabulous? People can reach right to you, and you can find out what's going on or what the problem is, and you at least get to them right away.
Right at your fingertips.
Very nice. And, Ryan, I have to admit that the first time you were on the show, you gave some advice that we live by now at our house, my wife Lisa and I, and it was pretty simple. You said you got to find a comfort zone or a comfortable degree and leave your thermostat there. And don't be turning it up and down and off and on and changing all that. If you're working your furnace or your air conditioner to death, and it's been beautiful.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, programming your thermostat to do certain setbacks is a great thing. Finding that comfortable temperature for you is perfect. That number is different for everybody. Mm-hmm. It really is. And sometimes that's different between household members as well.
Right.
It's a fight at the thermostat between husband and wife usually. And making that setback too far can be a bad thing because it'll overwork your system and you're not really saving any money. Right. So,
and the other thing that I remember about your first visit here is you have an app on your phone where you can control some things right from your phone.
Absolutely. Days? I'm sure my girlfriend is still sleeping right now. And so if we wanted to, we could make the house pretty warm, and I'm sure she would wake up.
Well, let's do it.
Yeah. Sorry, Marty Joe.
I'm in for that.
I'm in for that. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
We'll get John, our producer, to film it. And
she'll be one of our first callers then.
Yeah. Turn that back down.
Yeah, Wi-Fi thermostats are awesome. They're a new thing. Technology is a great thing. I hardly ever go to the thermostat anymore. It's all on my phone and controlled through my phone. So.
But it makes it great when you're downstairs and don't want to go upstairs to change it, I guess. You just
absolutely. Know, grab so the if phone I, and if I get go. That if I get that nudge, you know, saying, hey, I'm a little hot, yeah. Just roll over and turn it down on the phone.
And there you have it.
What would you do? Can someone hack in on that? Just turn your furnace off in the winter. turn that air off in the summer.
I guess if they wanted to.
Okay, here's a little. I just hacked into your system for a small price of $300. Drop that off here, and we'll turn your air back on. We'll turn the heat back on.
You know, it brings us to an interesting point about how the systems have been working overtime because of the heat and humidity. Now, as Tony mentioned earlier in the show, we're about a week away from the very first day of fall. And that's another one of those things where if it's going to go wrong, or if it can go wrong, it very well will go wrong at the inappropriate time.
Absolutely.
So let's talk a little bit about maintenance. Is there, before we get to the furnace, and I know we'll probably still have a couple of days, maybe even a little while longer, to use the air conditioner. What about maintenance and servicing and to keep your unit healthy?
Air filter is definitely the biggest thing. So a lot of people worry about it at the beginning of the season, but you got to make sure that is a year-round thing, keeping your eye on that air filter. So as we're kind of winding down here, one of the biggest things that seems to happen, and I don't know if there's a rhyme or a reason to it, but people will shut the air conditioner off because you got a great day out, mm-hmm. and then they turn it back on and it doesn't come back to life. I guess it just wants to give up for the season. I'm not sure. But,
got that signal. Hey, I'm done.
Hibernation's time for that. So.
That's funny. Sorry, but, well, I mean, it's funny, but it's not, because you have to try to find out what's wrong with it and that sort of thing. So when you have issues with your air conditioner, especially getting ready to tuck it away, what do you do? You know, if it's time to shut it off, is there any procedures or anything that ensure that it is going to come back on, Nick?
Not really. I mean, transitioning from air conditioning to heating season, you know, big thing you want to do is make sure filters are clean. As far as a homeowner goes, that's really the number one thing that they need to focus on is mm-hmm. filters.
And how often do you change your filter?
Filters, that's going to kind of be different depending on the filter type that they've got. Mm-hmm. You know, if it's your standard 1-inch filter, that should be changed monthly. No matter what the filter says on it, it should be changed monthly there. Your what we call media filters, or like the 4-inch filters, usually get about 4 to 6 months out of those. And then anything as far as electronic wise, should be cleaned on a monthly basis.
So pretty much a month to month issue where you've got to maintain it.
Mostly. Yeah.
Okay.
As far as the shutdown goes, I mean, there's not a whole lot that the homeowner can do. Like Nick said, it's the most important time is at the beginning of the season, making sure that everything gets cleaned and it's ready to go for that season. Okay. So
that makes perfect sense. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, they very well will need that for the next couple of weeks before we get in deep into the fall season. And then we'll have to focus on the furnaces. And what about the filter? You mentioned the filters. Are there different thicknesses, or is there one you can put in that's defeating the purpose?
So there's all kinds of filters out there, mm-hmm. and all different sizes, and the most common one would be a 1-inch wide filter. And I think that's where the biggest misconception with air filters comes from, is because the manufacturer who makes that filter says that it's good for up to 90 days. And so everybody tries to get 90 days out of it.
Sure.
But it's just not, it's not applicable unless you're just the only person who lives there. Maybe it's just you and it's just a little apartment mm-hmm. or condo or something like that. It might go 90 days, but yeah. for the rest of the world, it's going to be every 30 days. So,
yeah, Tony's going to make fun of me. I always get confused on the arrow on the filter.
It always points towards the furnace. Well,
towards the motor.
It says airflow, and I thought, okay, it's flowing out into the house, or is that the one that draws the air into... See where I get confused?
Yeah. You know, they put filters on the right side, the left side, the bottom, but right. no matter what, it always points towards the furnace.
That's a great... way to remember that.
Got it.
We're talking with Ryan and Nick from Arling House, and we do need to pause when we come back. Got a couple of other maintenance things that we want to suggest to you so that your experience is rather enjoyable and not as painful. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have Ryan and Nick from Arling House with us, and we're talking a little bit about some maintenance issues on your air conditioning, and we're also going to talk about heaters. But Tony's got a couple of questions for you guys.
Yeah, from a condenser standpoint, you know, the outside condenser for the air conditioning unit, a lot of people come into the nursery, and they're looking to hide that, you know, and I'm kind of like, you don't want to play anything up too close to the condenser unit, because then all of a sudden you start losing, you know, the efficiency of what it's able to provide the homeowner. Give us a little bit of information on that. And also, can the homeowner, like, take their garden hose and just keep that condenser clean, the outer part of it?
So as far as planting bushes and things like that around the outdoor unit, it's important per manufacturer specs that we've got at least 18 inches all the way around that thing. To make sure that we've got proper airflow, mm-hmm. because that's how we get rid of the heat that we've collected from inside the house. Or if it's a heat pump, that's where we're collecting heat outside to bring it inside in the wintertime. So, you know, we got to make sure that you've got plenty of clearance there. I promise you, you're causing, more trouble than it's worth if you're trying to hide it. It's going to take away from life. It's going to, you know, increase your bills. And you're going to have more mechanical breakdowns. And you're going to have an angry technician, especially if you plant like a holly bush right next to it.
or some ornamental grass if you get in it. It'll cut you up.
You got to kind of think of it like your car. You know, you wouldn't want to drive down the road, you know, with a piece of cardboard covering up the radiator in your car. Your car's going to overheat, right?
Right.
Same thing with your air conditioner. If we're not able to get airflow through that coil outside there, the air conditioner's going to overheat as well.
Gotcha. And tell me, before you get to your next question, we have a caller on the line. We have Doris from Union who's got a question for you guys about cleaning a filter on a gas burner. Doris, is it a gas furnace?
It's a gas furnace.
Okay. And how old is it?
The house is 12 years old, and it has like a metal filter on it, and they told me to take it out, wash it off, put it back in.
Okay. We have Ryan and Nick from Arling House with us, and we're going to let them address that question for you.
It sounds like it's an older style electronic air filter, so you might have with that one like the two larger metal cells. Is that correct?
Two larger what?
Are there metal cells, like a box
yeah.
looking? Okay. And yeah, that sounds like it's an old electronic air cleaner. So what you would want to do with that is, a lot of times with those, there's four separate parts. So you'd have the two metal boxes and then also two small pre-screens with that. You want to take those out and clean those on a monthly basis. Something as simple as just taking a garden hose to it or taking them into a utility sink and just rinsing them off. And then big thing with that is you want to let those dry out before you put them back in and put power back to it.
Okay, but they only showed me one.
Just the one filter in it?
There's usually one behind it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, wow. Yeah, and what?
Showed me that one. It's thick,
yeah.
thick, square metal filter.
Yeah. And it probably has some thin wires across it, right?
I'm not looking at it, yeah.
Okay. So what Nick is saying is behind the first one that you pull out, there's another one behind it. And I had one of these in my old furnace. That's how I know this. And so what you have to do is make sure it's off. Pull that first one out, Doris, and then get a little flashlight and look back there. You'll see another handle. And then you'll have to slide that one out as well. You should also have two, they look like little mesh screens in that same area, usually right butted up right next against it. You'll have to slide those both out too and then take them outside. And this is how I used to do it. You take them out to your yard, get your garden hose out, hose them off on one side thoroughly, then wait for a few minutes, turn it over, hose off the other side thoroughly, and then let them dry before you put them back in.
Yeah, definitely want to make sure they're dry before they get the power put back.
Can you take a couple of pictures and post them on our Facebook page, by the way?
I can try. I'm not real talented at that.
Okay.
But you said older furnace. How old? Because the house is like 12 years old.
The average life of a gas-fired appliance is about 18 years. It's an average, so sometimes you get that, sometimes you don't. One of the best things that you can do is, you know, Arling House does have a special right now on, it's $20 off of our normal tune-up. So it's just $69 for a furnace tune-up. If you have one of our licensed technicians come out, take a look at your furnace while they're there doing their cleaning. That's a great time to ask these questions, and they can actually physically show you how to do it, what's the safest and best way to do it. So.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Absolutely.
George, good luck. 749-B105 in and around the house. That's a great question, because when you see those things, and as she pointed out, if you're not accustomed to doing it, it can be intimidating.
Absolutely. One of the first things you should do, especially if you're moving into a new house or something like that, or you know, having you know, one of our professionals out there to kind of go through the system with you and, and just show you the ins and outs, because there's a lot of different types out there, filters, thermostats, and all.
And I have to be honest with you, that collection pre-screen would just get filthy in no time at all.
Absolutely.
It was clearly doing its job.
Yep.
But it would be really ugly. And by the time you're hosing that off going, wow, this stuff is in my house.
You know? Interesting. You know, you just, Ryan, you just said something I think is very valuable. And do you offer this service? If just say, for example, and I'm thinking about this now, just based on what you said, my next door neighbors, they just put their home up for sale. You know, do you provide a service, like if I was out looking to purchase a new home or an existing home, that say, hey, you know what, I would like for you to come and inspect this furnace?
Absolutely. We get that all the time.
That is very important. That's something a lot of people don't think about, because you don't know what you're getting into.
Sure. Yeah, then, I would recommend it.
Oh, I like that. That's awesome.
Yep. Yeah, one thing to consider with it, too, you know, with most home sales, you're always going to get a home inspection done on it. But generally speaking, your home inspectors are going to, they're not trained to do a full inspection on your heating and air equipment. And you know, your heating and air equipment is the you know, the biggest appliance in your house, so it's something that you want to make sure is going to be working properly for you as you move in. So to have that looked at before you buy the house, or you know, right when you're buying the house, is a good idea.
Yeah, we'll do a full rundown, heating and air, for potential buyers, or if it's the seller, you know, we get contact by the seller as well. Hey, I want to get this ready for the next person.
Sure. 749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have Nick and Ryan with us from Arling House. We need to pause for a moment and we'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we have Ryan and Nick from Arling House with us. They always pop in and see us a couple of times a year. It's always enlightening and educating. And, you know, I think that's probably one of the most important things we can do for our homeowners.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, it's something I want to ask you, because as I get older, you know, age in life, like everybody else, it gets that opportunity. You know, I was on an airplane the other day, and the guys up in the flight deck, they look like youngsters, you know. I'm like, can you drive this thing? So as you get older, you know, and someone comes in to work on your furnace or your air conditioning unit, I mean, you guys all look like young whippersnappers to me.
That's because we are old.
We're getting up there. So how do we know that, like, you know what you're doing? I think, does that come into question sometimes?
Absolutely. Oh, man, that's a great question. You know, us, you know, being in the tri-state area, you know, Indiana, Ohio, Kentucky, you know, your technicians are not created equal. Kentucky has a lot more stringent rules and regulations and licensing programs than the other two states. In fact, Ohio and Indiana don't have any licensing program per the state. So all of our technicians in order to be out on the job, especially your service technicians on the install side, at least one of them carries what's called a Kentucky Journeyman's license. Don't be afraid to ask them if they have a Kentucky Journeyman license. All of our technicians do, and they have to go through 3,000 hours underneath the direct supervision of a master license, someone who has their master's, and then after that 3,000 hours, they're eligible to take a test that the state actually provides. It's a tough test. I don't ever want to take it again. So you pass the test, and then that license expires every single year. And in order to keep it from expiring, you have to do 8 hours of ongoing education. So not to be, I know some great technicians over in Ohio and Indiana, but your Kentucky technician is going to be a little bit, just a notch above.
I like that. I'm from Kentucky, so it's, I feel good. You guys put my furnace in there, and so that's very, you know, it's interesting, though. You always want to know, do they have the proper credentials?
Absolutely, yeah.
Awesome. What about, you know, I noticed that you keep looking at this device that you had plugged in when you first arrived in the studio, and I don't know what you're monitoring, but I guess you're going to give us some sort of a report of how good the conditions of the environment are here in the studio?
Absolutely. Here very shortly.
Okay.
We should have a report on the indoor air quality of the room that we're sitting in. So Arling House stays on the cutting edge of technology, and this thing is going to pick up. It's a very pricey piece of equipment, and it's going to give us a few readings of things that we can't see.
So when I see that, what, tell us, what does it pick up? I'm just curious.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's going to pick up the particulates in the air. So, you know, the things that are floating around the air, dust,
right,
and things like that.
Right.
It's going to pick up carbon dioxide levels.
Important.
Carbon monoxide levels, humidity, temperature, and also chemicals that are in the air.
Now, you know, chemicals. Now, that's interesting because I always say this. That is where indoor house plants really come into play. And people say, I don't have any chemicals in my home. Well, you do. The fabric, the carpet, all that other good stuff. Household cleaners. Yeah. So it will pick up those particulates or those kind of items that...
Absolutely.
Interesting.
And we get a report that gets generated, and you know, I see these reports as they come through my email every time that a technician runs one. And the one that is always the highest, when people have Glade plugins, the VOCs and chemicals are through the roof.
No kidding.
Oh, my Lord. Yes.
So if those are high, what does that mean to the homeowner? Or what's the repercussion of prolonged, I guess, usage or being around those kind of things? Is that not healthy?
It's not healthy to breathe, that's for sure.
Man alive.
Yeah. I never would have thought. I had no idea.
Yeah, candles as well. Candles are a big thing, you know, they don't have a lot of great things in them that you
don't
see.
We sell candles. You're killing the candle sale.
The window
I promise
open,
nothing yeah. will kill candle sales.
Yeah, because, well, never mind. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Do we want to go to break here before we go to our caller? Or no, we'll go right to him. Or her. Spring is from 4.
Yes.
Yeah, from Forest Park, and you're looking for some more information about outdoor units?
Well, you guys started to talk about the outdoor unit and if it's okay to spray it off.
Okay.
And then you...
Air conditioners.
Yeah, the air conditioning right. unit itself, is it okay to hose it down?
Okay, we're going to let Ryan and Nick handle that for you.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, one of the big things with the air conditioner is making sure that it does stay clean. But as far as, you know, cleaning it properly to do the job properly, what should be done is we want to remove the top off of that air conditioner, and you want to spray it out from the inside out. You know, that air conditioner okay. is drawing airflow from the outside of that coil through the coil, and then it's pushing it up through the top of your air conditioner. So, you know, to do it properly, you want to clean it from the inside out.
That's something you want your technician to do for you.
Yeah, it's, you know, something you can get in trouble in doing by yourself there. But, you know, if you have anything...
You don't recommend the homeowner doing it themselves. You really think
You shouldn't need to. If you're having a tune-up done at the beginning of the season, you shouldn't need to. Unless you've got something like a dryer vent that's real close to the unit. While the unit is off, you know, you can take a hose. I've had a customer who pressure washed his air conditioner before. I promise you, it's not a good result.
right.
And so, you know, if you're going to do it, you know, if there's some surface dirt or grass, you know, the biggest thing is just keep the plants and everything away from it. Have a technician out at the beginning of the season or at some point in the season to clean it. And then other than that, you know, you shouldn't need to do anything.
So how far away from the unit do you want plants and grass and trees and everything?
18 inches.
At least 18 inches.
Okay. Yep.
And you just nailed it. You said something. You know, what about the guys? Well, if you have a technician come to your home twice a year, and then you have somebody that mows your lawn for you, and are using those big mowers and they're shooting grass up to the side, is it okay to spray that off?
Absolutely. Yeah, okay. If you're just going to use a light hose on it or something like that to knock it off.
Because I do see that often.
Yeah. Yep, you can turn your air conditioner off while they're mowing too, because I mean that thing is drawing.
Oh, that's a good
side.
Idea. Yeah.
So
yeah, that's
if a good you idea. Turn it off, I mean, they can't be mowing near the AC for very long. So just turn it off.
While Spring, does that help you?
That was great. I really appreciate it.
And if you ever need these guys, I can attest that they're awesome to have and just overlook your system for you. That's worth the while.
Let's give her that contact information again, Ryan.
Yeah, 859-727-9000 is the telephone number. ArlinghouseAir.com is the website, and you can also reach us through our Facebook page.
All right, Spring, thanks for hanging on, and thanks for
Thank
the call. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have Nick and Ryan from Arling House with us. We need to pause. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we have Nick and Ryan from Arling House joining us again this morning. And thanks again, guys, for coming in. We've been talking a lot about air conditioners. We just fixed, or at least helped out Spring. But we always try to remind our listeners, you don't wait till the last minute. So now's a great time to start looking ahead at your furnaces.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And safety and comfort really is the key to every big unit like that. When you think of your home, you know, everybody thinks about either the man cave or the living room, dining room, all that stuff. But that furnace unit is probably the most important thing in the
responsible in the house. For 40% of your utility bill. So that's extremely important.
Well, tell me a little bit about some of the safety and comfort things that we need our homeowners to look at.
Yeah, so, you know, the biggest thing is just getting that maintenance done. And right now, Arling House does have a special, an early bird special. You can be on the lookout for that or just give us a call in regards to it. It's $20 off the normal tune-up, so it's only $69 right now. We are already booked up through September and scheduling into October. So, you know, don't wait. Give us a call and get on our schedule so you're ready for the winter. But
let me ask you, Ryan, does it matter whether or not you guys put the unit in?
Absolutely not. No, okay. We're trained on all the brands that are out there, residential, light commercial products. So whether you got a mini split, a geothermal, a boiler, Nick is very well versed in the boiler side of things. And, you know, so we take care of all types of systems.
And tell me a little bit about emergencies. A lot of times people will just get into a panic and there's nothing worse than, you know, you come home and it's freezing cold, and the first thing you need to do is get a hold of you guys. I mean, what sort of comforts do you have that the homeowner will be able to go, okay, I got this taken care of?
Well, the first thing you want to do is just, you know, stay calm with it. You know, it's not the end of the world. It may seem like it at the time, but it's not the end of the world.
Right.
You know, go through some simple checks. You know, check your breakers. Are the breakers, you know, still in the right position? Everything's good. Mm-hmm. Light switches on the furnaces as well, too. You know, you'd be surprised how many times we'll run out to a call and it's the light switch just turns off. You know, whether kids are out there playing by the furnace or something like that, or you bump it with the laundry, it happens.
Yeah, it's just a joke there. You know, I keep flipping that switch and I don't see a light come on. You know?
It goes to the furnace.
Yeah.
You stand, look like Homer Simpson standing around. I don't know. I guess the switch is bad.
That's funny. It reminds me of a story of my neighbor across the street. When his son was young, he was putting rocks up in the exhaust fan.
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
And enough to stop everything. And So what would your suggestion be for that? Can you put like a screen over that, or is there a cap that goes over that? Or
you got to kind of watch doing that as well, too.
Mm-hmm.
If you get too fine of a screen on that exhaust pipe, what happens with that is it's the exhaust for your condensing furnace. So there is moisture that comes out of the end of that pipe. Well, we get that on a 20-degree day, and that condensation will collect on the screens, and it'll freeze up, and that'll cause the furnace not to work as well there, too. Best thing to do is just, try to keep the kids away from it, mm-hmm. and if at all possible, keep that open.
Right.
Or at the very least, you get something kind of like a wide screen just to keep, big things off of it. But, yeah, you want to try to keep it open if possible.
So we kind of, back to the emergencies, you don't panic. Make sure the switch is on. Make sure the breakers are good. And then call Arling House and...
Batteries in the thermostat, yeah, and check the air filter. That can be a big one. If it's not keeping temperature, maybe you feel air blowing out of the vents or very little, then it could be that you've got a plugged up air filter. And mm-hmm. so no matter what, just go ahead and change it if there's any question, and then make a phone call.
And you mentioned the tune-up. What kind of other plans does Arling House have that our listeners could maybe...
think about
considering.
So if you're just a first time, just wanted to check us out, the early bird special is a great deal on it. For the people who have used us for quite some time, they're probably Arling House Club members, and we have a club plan that is either monthly or yearly. You choose. It's just $19.95 a month, or you can pay it in full for the year. It's not cheaper one way or the other. We mm-hmm. just give you the option for both. And that's going to take care of your heating tune-up, your cooling tune-up. You're going to get a discount on everything that Arling House does. It's also going to take care of your diagnostic charges. So for that emergency call that comes in, if you're a part of our club plan, there's no charge for us to come out and tell you what you got going on with it, so long as it's Monday through Friday between the hours of 8 and 3.
Mm-hmm.
It's absolutely no charge, and then you get a discount on whatever repair it is. So,
well, I have to do a little testimony here and brag a little bit about Arling House. My mother and father-in-law, who live right next to us, furnace went out a couple of seasons ago, right in the dead of winter, and you guys came out, and you were going to have to replace the whole system. That's how old it was, but you quickly had a couple of units out there for some temporary heating.
Absolutely.
And that's something I think that maybe you should share with it, because it was just, they're senior members, and we were worried about that.
So one of the things that Arling House has invested in is temporary heating and cooling units. So one of the things that people do is especially the air conditioning, they freak out and they just buy the first thing that they can get in their house to get them relief.
Right.
And then afterwards, they might figure out, oh, shoot, probably should have done a little bit more research, or maybe I overpaid for this.
Overpaid, got the wrong size unit. Too big, too small.
Or maybe it could have been repaired.
Yeah.
So always a second opinion. And, Arling House will keep you comfortable while you're awaiting. We can't always replace it the next day like some companies, because, people are willing to wait, and our schedule fills up, pretty mm-hmm. fast.
Yeah.
So we set them up with temporary cooling and heating so they're comfortable while they make a good decision.
Which is a great offer, because, no one rides around with a spare furnace in the back of the truck. I got one here. We'll just throw this one in and it'll be fine.
Some companies do that. I'm just saying.
Yeah. I just happen to have one of those on the truck.
Yeah, let me get that installed for you. No, you don't need a second opinion. Always get a second opinion, even if it's Arling House. We're human. We make mistakes, as well. So just get a second opinion on anything, repair or replacement, before you go replacing that furnace.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie. We have Ryan and Nick from Arling House with us when we come back, and to talk about financing and whether or not you've ever replaced a unit, and what are some of the tips you might need to know before you make that call. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have Nick and Ryan from Arling House with us, and we've been talking a lot about the air conditioner and the furnace and tips for homeowners. Tell me a little bit about if somebody has never replaced a furnace or an air conditioner, what are a couple of key things for them to be aware of?
Don't freak out. All right?
Everybody, I like it.
Yeah, everybody just, gets a little nervous, a little scared when, when the heating or the cooling doesn't work, especially the cooling. I promise you, houses, you know, weren't commonly, you know, used with air conditioning until the 70s. Right, so we, you know, humans can live without air conditioning.
Sure, we can.
So when something breaks, always get a second opinion on the thing in question, and collect bids on it. You know, while we want your business, we also want you to make a good decision on whatever it is you're purchasing, because it's a big purchase, something you're going to have to commit to for 15 to 20 years, hopefully, right, if it's done right. So, you know, it's very rare that we walk into a house and we see the cookie jar on top of the fridge that says furnace and air conditioner, right? So, you know, people get nervous about how I'm going to afford something like this. Mm-hmm. You know, most reputable companies, Arlinghouse, does offer investment plans, and we've got some great options right now. 0% interest for 60 months, which is awesome. Or you can take the instant rebate, which is up to $1,500 on some qualifying equipment. So
great. That's a fantastic business tagline there. While we want your business, we want you to make a good decision. Pretty much defines Arlinghouse and the service and availability. No charge for that. No.
I'd like to add to that as well. There's one of our staff members at the Garden Center. She had just recently, someone last year, installed a new furnace unit for her and her husband. And it's like, oh, yeah, this qualifies for the energy credit with Duke.
Yeah.
Well, they've been playing phone tag for almost a year, and Duke say, no, your company that installed that has to provide that information to us. Mm-hmm. And the company's telling her, no, Duke needs to come out and take a look at it. And I remember, is there still a rebate of like $250? I'm not sure.
So Duke does have some things out there, and I think there's even, Nick, is there something from the state?
They're, well, right now, depending on which electric provider you have, they're Owen Electric has a rebate, Duke has a rebate. Depending on where you live, it could be slightly different. I know as far as Duke goes, Kentucky, Indiana, and Ohio all have different rebates that they're offering there. So. And then there is the federal tax credit that's available right now as well, too.
Cool. But you know what I remember distinctly? Your office personnel called me up and said, hey, I need this information. I'm going to submit it for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then in a couple of weeks, I got the rebate.
We take care of it all for you.
And like I said, Anita at the store, oh, gosh, she's been battling this for a long time. I don't know who put that in, but it's the runaround.
Yeah. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie. And, guys, we have just a couple of minutes here left, but I want to touch on something that very important is the air quality of the houses. And while we were in the break, we were talking about how houses are sealed up airtight now and fresh air is not really getting in. That's causing some problems. Tell us about that.
This is the new frontier. Indoor air quality is a big problem. You know, energy efficiency, everybody has been programmed to go green and to button up the house to save money. And what you're doing is you're trapping stale air chemicals in your home. So there's several products out there that we have that can combat those things and make sure that your home is healthy and safe for you and your family. So just keep that in mind when you are trying to save money.
That's exactly right.
You know, one thing to consider with that is the indoor air inside of our house a lot of times is at least 3 to 5 times or even more, you know, more polluted than what the outside air is.
Open up the windows once in a while. Let some air in. Nick and Ryan, Arlinghouse, thank you so much for coming in and spending some time with us. Have you come back again soon?
Oh, we appreciate that.
Thanks for having us.
Give us your contact information one more time.
It's arlinghouseair.com. The telephone number, 859-727-9000. And you can also reach us through Facebook.
Thank you guys so much. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Have a great weekend. We'll be back next week.